August 1st, my friends. You are tuned into Canadian Patriot Radio, and I'm your host, Critch. We got a whole collage of clips for you guys today. There's so much going on. You know, it's hard to rate what to cover. We've got Canadian doctors falling over dead all over the place, six in total. Two very questionable deaths. Two doctors, basically. One was a triathlon athlete that fell over dead after competing, and another was found dead in the swimming pool, allegedly. That hasn't been confirmed yet. But that's one story that I was debating what to bring to you. But I think what we're going to do, especially in the opening, is we're going to highlight Farm Credit Canada. There's just no way that this shouldn't be front and center in most Canadians' Canadians' minds. The fact that you've got the biggest farm lender jumping in bed with that fascist Just an Idiot and exploiting their customers and basically looking for anybody that was supportive or giving money to the trucker convoy and then actively trying to seize their accounts or stop their credit. Now, this was covered very well by Rebel News, so we're going to turn it over to them, and then we will comment on it after, like we always do.
The entire management team at Farm Credit Canada should be unceremoniously terminated the way they treated their customers. They spied on their clients for political wrongthink. Today, I'll show you what they did at Farm Credit Canada and how you can help me fire Farm Credit Canada. If you're not a farmer or loosely related to agriculture in some way, you might not know exactly what Farm Credit Canada is or what they do. It's the government bank for farmers. It's the largest agricultural lender in the entire country. It's supposed to help farmers, help us deal with issues pertaining to agricultural financing that maybe more conventional chartered Canadian banks aren't quite equipped to deal with or help us with. You see, the people who grow your food so that you don't starve to death in cities use this bank. So it's kind of important. And yet, this agency, this government agency, nonpartisan agency, allowed itself to be politically weaponized by Justin Trudeau to surveil and then ultimately punish and criminalize people who disagree with Justin Trudeau. The Trudeau Liberals invoked the Emergencies Act, as you'll recall, to seize the assets of peaceful people who gave financial support or participated in the Freedom Convoy to Ottawa protests. During all of this, Farm Credit Canada turned itself into Social Credit Canada. Internal documents obtained exclusively by BlackRock's reporter reveal that managers at the Federal Bank for Farmers monitored their farmer clients for wrongthink and then hid those investigations from the farmer clients. They denied farmers financing based on their political views. First, just take a look at this unbelievable internal email exchange obtained exclusively by BlackRock between FCC managers. Any individuals and entities that have been verified by the authorities as participating in illegal activity under the Act will face appropriate action, which will include not onboarding those found to violate the Act, freezing disbursements, and assessing the need to terminate business relationships, said that email. Yet another email from yet another manager read, if you become aware of potential customer involvement in the blockades, occupations, and other support of activity related to the Freedom Convoy, you must submit a tip to the Customer Diligence Center. Include the customer's name, stated involvement, date, and any other pertinent details. Please do not complete any investigative work yourself or communicate any information about FCC's approach to customers who voluntarily disclose their involvement. This is absolutely outrageous. Canada is not communist China, no matter how much Justin Trudeau admires them. Farmers are allowed to disagree with the government without facing financial ruin at the hands of partisan political enforcers working for the Farmers Bank. Conservative farmers are allowed to do banking. They're allowed to take out lines of credit for equipment and for buildings and to pay their help and for animals. And the entire management team at Farm Credit Canada should be fired, terminated for their despicable role in this Chinese-style social credit scheme. Every last one of them has got to go. Do these people work for farmers or for the Liberal Party of Canada? I think we know the answer to that now, don't we? Now, to sign our petition, which we will hand deliver to the head office of Farm Credit Canada, go to firefarmcredit.com. For Rebel News, I'm Sheila Gunn-Reid.
Absolutely despicable behavior coming out of Farm Credit Canada. There's no other way to describe it, what they did, and now what's been exposed by Blacklocks. You heard Sheila Gunn-Reid tell you that it's firefarmcredit.com. So make sure you visit and sign the petition. Rebel News will be delivering it to them personally, like she said. So I really don't think that this surprises Canadians. After seeing, you know, the big banks and everybody go against anybody that had heavy air quotes wrong think in this new fascist slash socialist country that we find ourselves in. There's just no denying that they're all in cahoots. They're colluding with each other to try to stomp out any anybody that opposes their globalist views in this country. So obviously we got to get louder and prouder, and we do have to follow the proper channels to get rid of these people. And I think this would be the best route. We'll see how Rebel News follows up with it, but. Just to repeat that's firefarmcredit.com. Find the petition, sign it, and get your name on there so that you are also involved in getting rid of these socialists at the top of all our corrupted organizations. I guess this is just kind of a curveball that we didn't really see coming. We had always, I guess, assumed that Farm Credit Canada was probably run by farmers for farmers, and now we've learned that this is just another corrupted government institution. Really no surprise that they've taken the role that they have, but now that it's exposed, it needs to be cleaned out, just like everything else. So, very, very, very disgusting behavior is the only way to describe it from people that should know better. Anyway, my friends, let's get this show started. We'll be right back. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom with all thy sons. Command. All right, welcome back, my friends. We're going to stay on the trucker convoy topic, and we're going to cover basically what's been going on with Tamara Litch. The other day, Tucker Carlson had Tamara Litch's attorney on, and it was just such a stellar piece. For those of you that haven't seen it, you're going to absolutely love this. So let's turn it over to Tucker so you guys can hear this interview.
So Fidel Castro ruled Cuba as a tyrant for decades. Probably shouldn't surprise you that his apparent son, Justin Trudeau, is trying to do the same to Canada. Justin Trudeau has jailed one of the leading organizers of the Canadian Freedom Convoy, which committed no violence. It formed to protest his lunatic vaccine mandate. We're getting an update on that case because we think it informs what's happening in our country. That's straight ahead. For decades, Americans used to make fun of Canada for being boring. Oh, it's all Molson and sled dogs, the great white waste of time. All right, well, things got pretty exciting in Canada when it descended into authoritarianism. The leader of Canada, effectively a dictator now, banned handguns. He also outlawed freedom of speech. Earlier this year, Justin Trudeau's government arrested a woman called Tamara Litch. Her crime was organizing a protest against vaccine mandates, not hurting anybody, speaking her views. Here she was in February.
It's not an illegal.
Speaking her views. Here she was in February.
It's not an illegal protest. It's in our Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
And so, what's your response then if you do get arrested, if you're the next person that police do arrest?
I'd love it if you'd speak louder.
She wants to know what my response would be if I get arrested.
What's the response? Hold the line!
Hold the line!
So, for complaining about Justin Trudeau's complete mismanagement of his once great country, she was jailed for 18 days. Then, when she was released on bail, Justin Trudeau had her jailed again. Why? What was the crime? Well, she appeared in a photograph with someone Justin Trudeau doesn't like. Thankfully, there is at least one check or balance left in Canada. Wednesday, a judge ordered her released from jail. Keith Wilson is her attorney. He joins us now. Mr. Wilson, thanks so much for coming on. So, are we overstating or oversimplifying what happened to your client? Did she commit some violent crime that we're not aware of?
No, she committed the most minor crime that we have in our criminal code, Tucker, and it's called the crime of mischief. It's the same crime that the police, if they find teenagers misbehaving in a park, they'll threaten them with to get them to go home and back to the basement. It's remarkable what's happened here. As you know well, our prime minister has expressed admiration for two different government systems in the world. One is communist China, and the other is his dear friend, or perhaps more, the Castro's Cuba. And we're no longer the true nor strong and free.
No longer a free country. And I say that with great sadness as a genuine admirer of Canada. So I wonder, is anyone noticing? I mean, if your prime minister jails a woman and tries to keep her there without bail because she complained about him, that seems like a human rights violation of the most serious magnitude. Has anyone said anything about this?
Well, it's more than a human rights violation, as you can appreciate, and what Americans need to understand is this is a deliberate attempt by the Trudeau government to intimidate Canadians. Look what Tamara did. She inspired not only Canadians, thousands of truckers to drive to Ottawa to stand for their rights and stand against the authoritarian overreach from these COVID policies. But she also inspired protests around the world. And the Prime Minister, I think, wants to send a message to Canadians that if you dare challenge me, and challenge my view of what living under my reign should look like, you will suffer consequences. She's a 49-year-old grandmother and mother, no criminal record. She spent 49 days in jail under ridiculous and troubling circumstances.
Last question, briefly. Has the United States government, has our State Department lodged a protest against this horrifying abuse?
They haven't, but what's happening, which is really important, is even people who are kind of middle of the road or bought the COVID mandate line are starting to question whether our fundamental institutions up here are becoming corrupt. You know, that to see this happen, to see a nonviolent citizen with no criminal record spend this time of jail, be rounded up by homicide detectives, paraded in chains and shackles, flown through airports across our country to go to be put in a jail cell in Ottawa, has really shaken a lot of people's sensibilities about how badly off track things are up in Canada.
Good. Well, I hope it awakens them. I really do. Keith Wilson, thank you for all the work you're doing on her behalf and on your country's behalf. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I guess the one thing that I want to add to this is the from the outside looking in, or from anybody that has even a little bit of discernment ability, all you can see happening here is the government and institutions are digging their own graves. And the more they try to fight, I guess the Great Awakening is the best way to describe what is going on. The more they try to fight it, the quicker they're digging their own graves. And they're never going to understand that. These people, these self-proclaimed elites and all their minions, which would be Trudeau and company, they live in the self-proclaimed elite bubble where they think they're doing the right thing. You know, the ones at the very top are well aware of what they're doing, but all their mindless minions, which is Justin Trudeau and company, I think they honestly believe that's how you stand out in front of the public and chirp the way he does and think he thinks that he's doing the right thing. Or I just honestly don't think he's smart enough to grasp that he's a puppet. He's a useful idiot. And then once they got their complete totalitarian fascist control over the entire globe, he would be exterminated with the rest of us. I don't think he's smart enough to even understand that. He's not from the 13 original bloodlines, I guess would be the way to describe it. But they use these people, they prop them up, they give them, you know, what did he get for the sale of his shares of the company that in BC that was that produced the lipid nanoparticles that they were using in the COVID shots? He got $500 million. He sold it to China, and I still think he owns royalties from it. So I mean, the guy's already pushing, probably, you know, with all the heavy air quotes, foreign aid, money laundering. We know what it is. It's money laundering. And how much of that came back? I wouldn't be surprised to learn at all that the Trudeau family is now worth billions. The guy's in the billionaire status just by, and the only thing he's done is fuck over his own people. That's it. Or, well, I guess I don't know how much he's done to Cuba, but on his mother's side, he's, you know, he's Canadian on his mother's side. And he's done nothing but stomp all over the freedoms and rights of his basically Canadian brothers and sisters. That's how he made billions of dollars. And stealing their money, stealing their taxpayer money. You know, the taxes in Canada are just unbelievably high, and especially now considering that, you know, we're all living in inflation. Unprecedented inflation. They're lying about where the inflation level is. We're all aware of that. They're saying it's 8.69%, roughly around there. We know damn well it's roughly about 30, 35. When you just look at the rise in cost of everything, like, you know, we've been in a depression since if you want my guess, I'm not an economist, but this is just my opinion. I don't think we ever recovered from 2008. When the markets crashed in 2008, and then they printed a ton of money to basically stimulate the economy. We never did recover from that. And what that did was it created economic bubbles. The biggest one is the real estate bubble. Right now, the prices of real estate are just phenomenally high. Not to mention anybody that's buying houses. Like there's prices in probably Saskatoon and Regina that would rival or come close to like suburbs of the GTA. Like, that's how ridiculous it is Canada-wide. You shouldn't be paying $1.5 million to buy a house in Saskatoon. Like, that's just retarded. But that's some of the prices that you're starting to see. Now, that's a bubble. That's not reality. That's if you're paying that, you need to give your head a shake, because the housing's not worth that. And then your actual interest rate is, you're never going to pay that down ever. So now is not the time to be buying. It's definitely the time to be selling, except for the fact that you're going to get hit with a 43% capital gains tax on your profits if you set it up wrong. So keep that in mind, my friends. The Trudeau government's going to hit you on your house if you make too much money off of it. They're going to come after probably half of it. But this is the world we live in right now. Okay, my friends, Tucker has been absolutely just destroying it lately, and let's just stick with Tucker, because I got one more clip from him, and this is the one where he starts basically exposing the fact that the top tier of the vaccine push on stateside have been admitting that they knew all along that the shots were basically bunk. So let's turn it back over to Tucker for one more clip here.
Well, as it turns out, and this is the real point, that happens all the time. On this channel just the other day, Tony Fauci, no less than Tony Fauci, admitted in public that actually we have no idea what effect the COVID vaccines might have on women's fertility, on their menstrual cycles. Wait a second. Remember when suggesting that could get you bounced off of Twitter and Facebook as a conspiracy theorist? Well, it turns out it's true. Here's Tony Fauci.
There's been a number of studies. New York Times just did one about menstruating cycles and how that is affected by vaccines.
Yeah, though. Well, the menstrual thing is something that seems to be quite transient and temporary. That's the point. That's one of the points. We need to study it more.
Oh, we need to study it more. We need to study it more. It's just like human fertility, reproducing the species, the most important event in most people's lives. We need to study it more. Oh, but it's too late. We just forced millions of women to take that drug. Sorry. So how did they release a vaccine and then make it mandatory when they didn't understand the long-term effects of the drug? That's a very good question. Here's Deborah Birx. She's the former White House COVID response director, again on Fox News.
I knew these vaccines were not going to protect against infection, and I think we overplayed the vaccines, and it made people then worry that it's not going to protect against severe disease and hospitalization. It will, but let's be very clear. 50% of the people who died from the Omicron surge were older, vaccinated.
What? Stop the quote. I knew these vaccines were not going to protect against infection. Really, Deborah Birx? But somehow you forgot to mention that as people were being fired from their jobs for not taking this on the premise that if they took it, they would never be infected? When do you get criminally charged? Soon, we hope. And then there's the effect of the COVID vaccines on the elderly, the population most at risk. According to The Lancet, no less than, vaccinated people around Joe Biden's age are 80% more likely to become sick after taking the COVID shot as compared to unvaccinated people. Wait, what? 80% more likely to become sick after taking the shot that was supposed to prevent them from getting sick? How is this not the banner headline? It's being ignored. Well, as one scientist wrote in the Journal of Virology, quote, the study showed that immune function among vaccinated individuals 8 months after the administration of two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine was lower than that among the unvaccinated individual. So it's not just that your natural antibodies were more powerful than the vaccine. We've known that for a long time, though they lied about it. Turns out the vaccine appears to depress your immune system. This has massive implications, not just for COVID. There are all kinds of horrible diseases you can get with a suppressed immune system. The Journal of Food and Chemical Toxicology found the same thing. Quote, vaccination induces a profound impairment in type 1 interferon signaling, which has diverse adverse consequences to human health. What the hell? And yet these people are on TV blithely admitting, oh, well, we should do more study on that, after we forced it on the entire American population, on billions of people globally. And this might explain how Joe Biden got COVID after getting every available shot and telling us just a year ago that vaccines conferred total immunity.
The various shots that people are getting now cover that. You're okay. You're not gonna get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Hey folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID, but I've been double vaccinated, double boosted.
So one of the responses to this is great sadness, of course, because even people who didn't vote for Joe Biden believed his administration when they said this, because they were acting in the name of science. People were afraid of COVID, in some cases with great justification. Some people were at risk of dying from COVID. And they reached out and accepted this drug on the promise told to them repeatedly that it would save them.
And it's the exact same thing up here in Canada. Dr. Teresa Tam, Dr. Tranny Tam, telling you that you are, when they rolled it out, they said it was going to be 99% effective, that you would not get and spread COVID. That narrative quickly changed, and all they were doing from that point was covering their ass. But they knew They knew from the Pfizer studies that they didn't work. They already knew when they rolled it out. So just like Tucker said, when do you get criminally charged? Soon, we hope, he says. But is it enough, my friends? Is it enough? Think about the deaths. Think about, you know, the six doctors that we talked about in the pre-show. Not to mention in Canada, they're covering up the deaths so bad. Now they're just not reporting COVID at all. They're just not reporting it because they know damn well what the numbers are going to show. At what point do all the people, you know, even Health Canada, for just not reporting the numbers, at what time does that, or when does that become criminal negligence? And when are people going to start demanding answers for this? Is it going to be once one of your own family members falls over from these shots? As you guys know, it almost happened right off the bat in my family. The second shot almost killed my mom. So, you know, I was right out of the gates, and my opinion of these shots was not good to begin with. And then to have that happen, I was not, oh boy, it didn't go over well. Let's put it that way. And now I've got friends in my area, people in the community that are sick now because of it. We've got cases of myocarditis. We've got people that have died. We've got everything. And what I'm witnessing within my own community is a willful ignorance is the best way to describe it. People are just looking the other way, especially because when you think about the fact that most of the, you know, I would say it'd be probably 60-40 in my community. 60% actually did, and then 40% didn't, would be my guesstimate, just judging from the people that I know and everything like that. And the people that did are now just not participating in the, I'm talking about people that used to engage in very, very heated arguments over these shots prior to learning what we're learning now, with myself and others that were quite outspoken against them. And now you try to engage these people with the facts and evidence that Tucker Carlson has brought forward in a couple of clips for us here, and they just won't comment. They've just gone completely mute. And what they're doing is they're tuning it all out because they know they're wrong, and they won't admit they're wrong. But what I'm scared for them, because these are good people. Don't get me wrong. these are all good people that were fooled or coerced into taking a shot that has the potential to severely limit their lifespans and cause all sorts of problems. You know, now there's studies showing it. Tucker showed you this, or listed off some of the quotes from studies that the vaccinated people now are having a higher risk of infection along with other ailments. Well, that's something we've been saying on the show from the very beginning, because there was a group of doctors right from the start that said that this is exactly what's going to happen, and it's happening. Doctors and vaccine professionals, like career vaccine people, with Geert Vandenbosch coming out and saying this is going to severely hurt the human population. And they were right. It's you know, to be on our side of the fence and to have to watch this is basically the longest, saddest, most excruciating and unsatisfying I told you so in the history of the world, is what this is. But now we are learning even more troubling stuff about this whole rollout, the whole thing. When you start taking the 40,000 foot view and you look at the big picture of what's going on here, the two-stage bioweapon, which was the release of COVID-19, and then the shots, which are basically a tracking and monitoring system, if you want my opinion. But even bigger than that was the testing, the harvesting of DNA from people. And that's what those the COVID tests were, the swabs that you had to get anytime you tried to go anywhere, fly or anything like that. They were harvesting your DNA. They were looking for specific DNA or specific genotypes or families, bloodlines, is my opinion. That's me kind of throwing it in there. But I got a clip sent to me from a buddy of mine from a couple towns over. He knows who he is. They kind of got into where this could potentially be going, into DNA weapons. Now, let's take a listen to this clip, because it's very troubling.
Colorado U.S. Representative Jason Crow recently warned at the Aspen Security Forum just what InfoWars has been warning about for well over a decade since Google's YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki founded the company 23andMe.
To be clear, I think one of the things we're talking about here is that there are now weapons under development and developed that are designed to target specific people. Right, that's what this is, where you can actually take someone's DNA, take their medical profile, and you can target a biological weapon that will kill that person or take them off the battlefield or make them inoperable. So you can't have a discussion about this without talking about privacy and commercial data and the protection of commercial data, because expectations of privacy have degraded over the last 20 years. Young folks actually have very little expectation of privacy. That's what the polling and the data show. And people will very rapidly spit into a cup and send it into 23andMe and get really interesting data about their background. And guess what? Their DNA is now owned by a private company and can be sold off with very little intellectual property protection or privacy protection. And we don't have legal and regulatory regimes that deal with that. So we have to have an open and public discussion, and this is going to have to be a political discussion about what does the protection of healthcare information, DNA information, and your data look like, because that data is actually going to be procured and collected by our adversaries for the development of these systems.
Also, if we look at food security, and what can our adversaries do with biological weapons that are directed at our animal agriculture, at our agricultural sector, hoof and mouth disease, highly pathogenic avian influenza, African swine fever, all of these things have circulated around the globe, but if targeted by an adversary, we know that it brings about food insecurity.
DNA testing is central to the plans of the New World Order.
We cannot hide away from human population growth because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
Thanks also to the leadership of China in terms of fighting the pandemic, in terms of reinvigorating its economy. We have now a window of opportunity to create this global reset which we all need.
Recent coronavirus testing added to the logging of Americans' DNA. As Natural News reported, foreign powers can collect, store, and exploit biometric information from COVID tests, reads a statement issued by Bill Evanina, director of the United States National Counterintelligence and Security Center. Evanina believes that Communist China is trying to collect Americans' DNA in a race to control the world's bio data. He added that he thinks Chinese companies are actively investing in U.S.-based biotech companies to further the country's efforts to attain all human DNA, which brings it all back to hardcore biotech investor Google, who also tracks and records data on every U.S. citizen. And once they have all of that, they have all of us.
Kind of shocking and a little bit alarming and scary when you start taking a bigger picture of this, isn't it, my friends? It was all, I think this is probably more true than conspiracy personally. I hate using the term conspiracy as it is. It's mostly conspiracy truth by now. People should be realizing that, those that they've labeled, tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists have pretty much been right about most of this stuff. So when you start thinking of the big picture about this, this is all DNA harvesting and collecting. And are they going to start rolling out specific bioweapons that target, certain DNA strands that have a tendency to participate in wrong think. Would that be the targeting that I would think that they would potentially use this for? Now, when you start thinking in the terms of the fact that they found bio labs in Ukraine and they were specifically testing on Eastern Ukrainians, which are Russian descent. They were collecting and harvesting data from these people, and it was brought out or brought to the forefront by Putin himself that they were potentially looking to use bioweapons against Russian people. Now, when you start connecting these dots, right now these dots are still a long ways apart, but they seem to be, they're there, and you can connect them. Now, I'm not red string theorying this and being one of those crazy guys that is bringing this together, but it's one of the things that makes sense when you really start thinking about it. Now, they might not have specifically collected DNA sample from you through a COVID test, but odds are someone in your family. I'd be willing to bet that almost every family in the U.S. and Canada at some point has had their DNA collected at this point. So when you think about that, that's a very scary and unnerving little bit of knowledge to have, that they probably have profiled almost, I'd be willing to bet they're at 90 to 99, 95% of the U.S. and Canadian families out there that they've profiled your DNA sequence through one member of your family. Now, when you think of terms of family, there was a division created by this even within our own families. You know, there's some of us that just held out and said, "Nope, I'm not getting this shit. I'm not getting these shots. There's no way that I'm going to subject myself to something that hasn't been put through the proper testing." And then you had people that were like, "Well, if you want to come visit, you're going to have to get the shots." Within your own family, that with most of us, we can relate to that because we were divided within our own families. It's crazy how, you know, even within my own family, there's I basically have those that are 100% bought into the narrative. I've got those that were coerced because they wanted to travel. And then I have the camp that I belong to within my own family that we are never getting these shots no matter what. And so through the ones that have gone along completely and just entirely went along with it, I am almost 100% certain that my family lineage has been documented and can be sold to whoever wants it to exploit it. It's kind of horrifying, and it's I guess it's just another reason we've got to start unhinging these psychopath globalists from positions of power. We got to start breaking these chains. Okay, my friends, in the last show, I told you that I would bring you the update from Rocco Galati. This is one of the most important ones to follow. And, you know, speaking of what we're speaking about, Rocco Galati got so very ill. Now, I'm wondering if he wasn't targeted. Now, maybe it wasn't necessarily a bioweapon, but who's to say they didn't target him with electromagnetic radiation? Because he was extremely sick. He was hospitalized. We'll play this as much as this interview as we can, because this interview is over an hour, but we'll play the parts where they talk about the case, and then they get into some interesting information. And but he also gives you a review of how sick he really was, and he almost passed. Now, me, myself, you know me, this is just my opinion, but I wonder if he wasn't targeted, because he has the strongest case. He's basically bitch-slapping the government's attorneys and making them look like fools to the point where they can't even rebuttal his arguments in a court of law. Anyway, let's turn it over to Action for Canada and Rocco Galati so you guys can get updated on this case as well.
Had you on the show. Much has happened since you were last here. And so I kind of want to give you the platform for a moment, Rocco. We all are doing a live on Facebook, and I just want to invite people who are on Facebook that there is a link to the Zoom meeting in the description. So if you want to click on that link, you can join us as we'll be moving forward with the show tonight, specifically on Zoom. And so, Rocco, I just want to give you actually the floor to open up. You know, you've been through so much within the last 8 months, and I think, you know, the people that are joining us tonight love you, they care about you, and whatever you're comfortable sharing about your journey, we'd like to hear about.
Well, let me, first of all, in all fairness and in complete disrespect to the five obituaries about me that are still online claiming or hoping that I'm dead. In the words of Mark Twain, you know, my rumors of my premature death are somewhat exaggerated. The grace of God and the prayers of all of those people who prayed for me, I'm still here. I think it fair to just clear the air and explain to people what I've been through since last, just before Christmas. Just before Christmas of 2021, I fell ill. I was bedridden by Christmas Day on the 25th, I was hospitalized on January 2nd. I went into ICU. I was in public hospital till January 22nd. During those 21 days, I endured a very brutal 11-day coma. I three times came within 45 seconds of being declared dead. Through the grace of God and my wife's incredible resilience and support, I was able to get the treatment of my choice over the objections over the hospital, and I survived the coma, otherwise I would have been dead. On January 22nd, 2 days after I came out of the coma, I insisted and required that they release me against medical advice. I did not want to be in that hospital anymore. I was released on January 22nd to a private care facility. When I went to that private care facility, I was on 4 liters of oxygen a minute. I was completely paralyzed. It took me a while to get my strength back and my mobility back. The hospital had promised me to get me back on my feet by the end of June. I was back. I was stuck. I was with extreme difficulty within 14 days. I was on my feet. However, so from January 22nd, I did not go home until I was off the oxygen, which was on March 2nd. So from Christmas Day to March 2nd, I was essentially under acute care. I then went home, but I was not out of the woods. I continued to recuperate. And in fact, today I'm not 100%. I'm continuing to recuperate, but you know, I've tried as much as possible to slowly get back into the grind. I had my first court appearance, as you know, Tanya, on your case, at my client's insistence, which I abided by. I was given permission by the BC Supreme Court to respond to the motion to strike that was brought by all defendants in the Action for Canada case. And that was May 31st. And I, you know, that was a 1 day hearing. And I got to tell you, after that hearing, it took me 2.5-3 days to recover. And all I did was sit and talk. So I'm still recuperating. I still have a few physical challenges I don't really need to get into on a Zoom call. My endurance is still an issue and a concern. I continue to build my resistance and my endurance. I made my first public speaking appearance on June 23rd at the Alternative Education Conference outside of Toronto. And last week I attended by teleconference some divisional court scheduling matters with respect to the doctor's cases that my office has continued to pursue. With respect to that's basically a rough sketch of my personal circumstances. With respect to the progress of the various COVID pieces of litigation that my office, Rocco Galati Law Firm, conducts. Sometimes people are confused. They think that the Constitutional Rights Center is a law firm. It is not. It's an advocacy center and a resource center that assists law firms and other lawyers, including some of the cases we're doing, but it is not a law firm. All these cases that are being litigated with me are under my firm, which is Rocco Galati Law Firm Professional Corporation. So while I was in a coma and hospitalized, my firm, my associates and junior lawyers and staff, law clerks and law students, continued on with the progress of the cases. So before I went into a coma, I had argued two of the doctor's cases, one of which was the very significant case, which I haven't had time to publicize because I went, you know, I've been ill. Was the Dr. Carolyn Turek case, where the College of Surgeons and Physicians in Ontario is trying to discipline her just because of the content of her Twitter posts on Twitter. I brought a divisional court application seeking declaratory relief and prohibition, saying, well, you can't discipline a doctor just for free speech. they brought a motion to quash saying it was premature. And the divisional court said, yeah, well, it's premature, Mr. Galati, because they haven't struck a disciplinary hearing yet. If and when they do, and you're not satisfied, come back. It's premature. But during the, in the course of that application, I had challenged the directive of the medical college of April 30th, 2021 that said that no physician shall criticize any statement or policy of any public health officer. And while the divisional court on the short term said, yeah, it's premature, we're not going to hear you now, they gave the college a real stiff backhand by saying, and by the way, you know that directive that you wanted to challenge? We wouldn't hear it anyway, because it's not law. It has no impact of law. It's not binding on doctors. It's just an opinion of the college. So the college lost a real big issue. They won in the short term, but lost in the long term. So I have quite a few doctors' cases that I'm representing where the only complaint is that they don't like their Twitter feeds. They don't like their criticism of the official COVID-19 measures. Now, this is not an insignificant issue, because if they can gag doctors, they've gone a long way, but we've stopped them from gagging doctors just by that case alone. We have two other cases on the go that are progressing and progressed while I was in a coma and ill. My law firm was carrying them. One is the Dr. Killian case, and a lot of people know Dr. Killian. She was the Owen Sound doctor who resigned because of the lies that the CEO of the hospitals was propagating. Again, they're disciplining her, and a Dr. Kuska in Ontario as well. In both of those cases, we're representing the patients as well as the doctors, saying that, wait a minute here, a lot of the patients of these doctors who've not complained are saying, no, we don't want our records going to the college. There has been no patient complaint against these two doctors. And this is the first time that the rights of the patients are being advanced. In the past, nobody's thought of doing this. The patients of Dr. Killian, Dr. Kuska, are saying, listen, we don't want investigators at the CPSO, the college investigators, seeing our private hospital records, our private medical records. We're happy with our doctor. We're not complaining. And so essentially what they're saying is, why should a college investigator know that I got treated for gonorrhea or had an abortion or whatever the case may be? It's none of their business. Just because a disgruntled member of the public who can't tolerate criticisms against the COVID measures lays a complaint against the doctor, and they're not a patient. They don't have any relationship with the doctor. Why should the college walk in and say, we want all your records wholesale? So these cases have progressed. Dr. Killian's judicial review is being heard September 28th, and Dr. Kuska sometime thereafter. The other update I have is that my office is also, before I went into a coma, I began drafting a statement of claim in the federal workers' action. We, on May 31st, my office issued a statement of claim in federal court to the tune of $640 million against the federal government on behalf of about 640 federal employees who were fired for refusing to take the vaccine. That got filed May 31st. You know, not that I'm an egotistical, Tanya, but I don't think it's a coincidence that the Prime Minister of Canada suspended temporarily the vaccine mandates to travel because they were front and center. They are front and center as part of our challenge, the federal challenge. So he's playing cat and mouse with us. He wants to go to court and say, oh, you don't have to hear this because we've suspended them temporarily. But as everybody knows, he's playing games saying they're going to may bring them back if necessary. Plus now they've reinstituted random mandatory testing at the border. We've challenged that as well in that federal action. So we may go in an injunction to stop the PCR testing, which contravenes Section 14 of the Quarantine Act. So in addition to that, on June 15th of this year, we issued notice in Ontario. If you want to sue the Crown for damages, you have to give the Crown 60 days notice of the claim. So we issued notice with an attachment of the statement of claim. We will be filing August 15th on behalf of 424 Ontario healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, orderlies who work in the healthcare system, who were given the same ultimatum by Doug Ford and the hospitals under Directive 6, saying either take the jab or lose your job. We are in the process, we're almost there, of organizing what we're calling the first responder and essential worker action in Ontario on behalf of police officers, firefighters, ambulance drivers, sanitation workers, and transit workers in different various municipalities in Ontario. So these are progressing. The last thing I'd like everybody to know, and this is mind-staggering, to as an indication on how much of a threat they're taking free speech and free thinking people, and I think Action for Canada will be in their target and in their bullseye soon. On May 30th, there was a report issued. I only became aware of it July 12th to a reporter from Rebel News. There was a group of academics in Quebec, and I call them the scraping the bottom of the barrel academics from the University of Sherbrooke, LUCAM in Montreal, and one from Laval University, along with half a dozen of their researchers and students, who issued at the request of the minister, the minister of economics or in Quebec, for the chair that was established at the University of Sherbrooke for the prevention of radicalization, terrorism, and violent action, which was set up to try to mitigate against these Muslim Canadian kids who were going abroad to fight against, including Canada, in military conflicts around the world. They issued a 130-page report called The Leaders of the Conspiracy Movement in Canada, yeah. Naming 45 leaders of the conspiracy theorists of Canada. And they hone in on three major ones, you know, Maxine Bernier, Ezra Levant, and Rocco Galati, with Stéphane Blais from the Fondation movement in Quebec, as people who are advocating radicalization, terrorism, and violent action. Mm-hmm. Also in that report, they say that these conspiracy theorists who think this way are suffering from a severe, undiagnosed mental illness, and here we are to tell you that they're mentally ill. Now, what's this remind you of? Nazi Germany, Communist China, Communist Russia, trying to, and in effect, labeling political dissidents as mentally ill and putting them in psychiatric gulags, right? The other thing that they're aiming to do with this report, Tanya, is try to go a step further and put us on the terrorism list under the criminal code, and then remove our party, our political party status, our broadcasting license, my license to practice law. So the other really vile, vicious, and depraved aspect of this report is they purportedly did it on behalf of UNESCO, a UN agency, yet they only published it in French. I've never seen a UN agency report that's not published in the five official languages. And I know why they did that, because if English Canada got wind of this report in English, they would be outraged. Several reporters in Quebec have already come down and said, this is outrageous. How do you put these people into this category? And I'll end with this before I take questions from you or anybody else, Tanya, is they use the BS CIA definition of a conspiracy theorist, which is a conspiracy theorist is someone who believes that all major decisions taken are taken by a secret, nefarious body or institution. Well, I'd like to break that down for a second. Number one, neither I nor Maxime nor Ezra nor anybody, most of those people on that list, if any of them, had, in fact, I can't speak for all of them, I don't know a lot of them, fit that definition. But let's be clear about something. If we're talking about splitting the atom, gravity, weights and measures, or the spiral and cosmic forces, right? Astrophysics of the universe, which is unaffected by human conduct and decisions, we can talk about what's real and what is not. When we're talking about any human decision made by humans, any socioeconomic or political decision made by humans and human societies, there's only three possible forms any of those decisions can take. One, they are either made in public in a fully transparent way, or they're made in secret in a completely clandestine way, or a mixture of the two. And there is no other reality. So what the frigging is the problem by saying that some decisions are taken in secret by governments? Otherwise, we wouldn't have the CIA, Mossad, CSIS, or any security service. Some decisions are taken in public, and some it's a mixture of two. For me, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I am not a conspiracy theorist. I am a conspiracy analyst. And surprise, surprise, both with the statement of claim I filed in Ontario through VCC and your statement of claim in BC, we pretty much delineated the conspiracy 2 years before it came out. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm a conspiracy analyst. To me, conspiracy is not a dirty word. Conspiracy is both a criminal code offense and an actionable tort in civil law because they exist. So there you have it. My mother, if she were alive today, would say to me, son, take it as a compliment. You know we're getting under their skin when they go to these fascistic, Nazi-like Goebbels propaganda toilet paper reports based on simply my Twitter feeds to conclude that I and Maxine and Ezra are advocating radicalization, terrorism, and violence, and that we're suffering from a mental illness for doing so. These people who call themselves academic are deep sea snorkeling up their own asshole. And I'll leave it at that. That's my update.
Boom. How about that analyzation, my friends? But it's cool that, you know, he's given you the updates on all the cases that he's facing. He's gotten some wins, some roundabout wins. He's fighting multiple, so many cases, it's unbelievable. Not to mention a $640 million case that probably was the culprit that stopped the mandates for the summer. You know damn well they're going to try and push him again in the fall, but he's all over it on behalf of not just the Canadians he's representing, but all of us. And it's really cool that he brought to light the greasy actions that they are taking to try and label. That's the only tool they got at this point against their opposition, is to label and then get people like Rocco and probably me more so than Rocco, because we say way more than he's going to. Labeled as a conspiracy theorist and then placed onto a domestic terrorist watch list, where from that point they can limit your rights and freedoms and just fuck with you eternally. So that's why, just hearing what Rocco had to say, that's why it was so important to me, even though it was July 20th, that interview. That's why it was so important to me to get that out to you guys. Feel free to listen to it a couple times, because he covers so much information there. The whole statement he made was just chock full of information. So make sure you wrap your head around exactly what he was telling you, the fights that he's involved in court, what stages they're at, and what wins have already come from it. So as always, my friends, thank you for tuning in to Canadian Patriot Radio. This week, I got to go to Calgary. I got some work I got to do in Calgary, so there probably won't be a show till the end of the week again. And then after that, I should be a little bit more free. Should be getting back to 2 episodes a week. But until then, we'll see how it all plays out. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook. It's Canadian Patriot Radio. Use the message button for anything you deem show worthy. If you prefer email, it's CanadianPatriotRadio @gmail.com. I encourage everyone to join the Telegram room. It's a little bit quiet over there lately, so it'd be good to get some more vocal folks in there that have all sorts of anything you want to talk about. That's the room to put it into, and that one is t.me/CPR_2. And if none of that is the way you want to go, then visit the website at CanadianPatriotRadio.ca. As always, only word of mouth is the only way that this show gets out. This is a non-profit show. We don't look to profit off it. It is strictly just information by Canadians for Canadians within this new fascistic country that we find ourselves in. So feel free to share it on any social media platform that you deem appropriate. Until next time, my friends, in all thy sons command. For joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.